Welcome to Holden Village. Today in the fabulous Fireside Room, today's speaker is Charles Lane, and he will be speaking on the West in an hour. So let's listen in on Charles Lane.
Hi, I'm Charles Lane, and gee, a lot of you are familiar faces, so what I've been doing so far must not have driven you all away. A new week, a new topic for me, one and very near and dear to my heart, and it has to do with the nature of the American West and some of the challenges of life there, some of the problems associated with the continuing development of the West, and I'm going to be doing some things later in the week with respect to national parks and the history of conservation movements in the American West, and some of the later things that have been going on in terms of private individuals and groups making efforts at land conservation. Today, I'd like to take you on a whirlwind tour through the West, and hence the slideshow. Feel free to jump in any place in here that you want. You'll have seen many of these places, but I've had a long and enduring love affair with America's national parks, and I want to take you through a few of them this afternoon. So if that's all right with you, we'll give this a go. Geologists always, or almost always, start their presentations with a sunrise photograph, which gives you a real clue as to how we end them, right?
Riding into the sunset.
Sunset, yes, something about like that. But the sunrise photograph, and the sunrise could be almost anywhere, but in this case it happens to be in the vicinity of Jackson, Wyoming, which is where we're starting affairs. We're on our way up to Yellowstone, the first formed of America's national parks, the largest of the contiguous 48 states, which will be a topic of discussion on Thursday, as a matter of fact. And time to break camp and head out. This photograph has absolutely no geologic or scenic importance of any kind, but it is something in that I'm going to point out to you what is arguably the worst automobile ever manufactured, and that is the 1972 Rambler Ambassador station wagon. Not this Volkswagen bus that you thought I was talking about. But the Rambler Ambassador, these things broke down on us unceasingly as we were traipsing across Wyoming. I had spent the night inside the car, which is unusual for me. I'm normally one of these people that like to sleep out without a tent, just looking at the stars. But we had stopped in town and had picked up on Kentucky Fried Chicken the night before because we'd gotten in late. And I noticed as we were sitting around the campfire, a lot of people were eating the chicken and just sort of pitching the bones off. And we did have about a 2 a.m. visit that night, and I was inside the car laughing. Yeah. Everybody else, we were madly scrambling to get under the car and out of the way. So there we're set off, up the Snake River Plain. And, of course, you see off in the far distance Les Grands Tetons, the Grand Tetons National Park. I'm sure that many of you are aware that this is an area where the French came in first, the French trappers, and that's why you have names like Dubois, for example, up in that part of Wyoming. And you realize, of course, that French, Les Tetons, is nothing more than the impolite vernacular for the Great Breasts. So this is the Great Breasts National Park. And the Snake River Plain, of course, this photograph wonderfully demonstrates the different stages of downcutting of the Snake River Plain and the floodplains and the uplift around here that has produced that terraced or stepped appearance. If you turn around, which is literally what I did, and take this photograph back the other direction, that's the Gros Ventre Slide. Back in the 50s, came tumbling down as a block of sandstone. You can make out this little line right here that basically took off and took a slide in mass, and it's, you know, several hundred yards on the side, and you can walk over there, and the trees are still in place on top of it. It just took off down the hill and came to rest at the bottom, and there's a lot of broken up material over there as well, but in this particular spot, if you turn around and look away from the Tetons, you can actually see that. And of course, there's Jackson Lake and the Grand Tetons just as you're heading into Yellowstone. Notice the similarity with the Cascades. Notice the high, jagged, sharp peaks on here, indicative of a glaciated terrain. The Tetons were glaciated as well as the Cascades. For many people, that's the first look at Yellowstone. Not overly impressive, although beautiful country. Some of the Absaricas off over here in the background. This is the Hayden Valley. And of course, this is named after Hayden, who was one of the early mappers and explorers of the West for the United States government. The Hayden surveys of the 1860s and 70s and 80s took care of a great portion of the Northern Rockies and Northwest, just as John Fremont mapped for the U.S. Army into the central Utah area. And so now there's the Fremont River in that area that bears his name. And of course, John Wesley Powell in the Grand Canyon to the south. The upper falls of the Yellowstone and the Yellowstone River. We're heading down to the site most normally seen. This is a testimony to the idiocy of youth, namely mine. And you see the handrail here that I'm about to go over? So this was going over the handrail, and actually there were two of us over the handrail. There was one guy standing holding the handrail and then holding my hand. There was me holding his hand and the camera out here like this. This is what being 18 or 19 does for you. And of course the view below the lower falls, the Yellowstone. You all see this one. This is the classic photograph and the classic spot. We're looking at the lower falls, Yellowstone. All of this yellow volcanic rock, hence the name. They weren't terribly imaginative with this one. And I guess the French, in their own way, weren't that imaginative with Les Grands Tetons either. It sort of comes across that way. The whole Yellowstone complex is a gigantic volcanic hotspot. And that's why Old Faithful, which we did not get to on this trip, and so I don't have any photos of that. I do have various of the sulfur pots, that rotten egg smell that you're aware of. This has to do with the heat energy of molten magma not very far below the surface. As far as geologists are concerned, this is an active volcano area. You could have something go off literally at any time in this part of the world. Speaking of some of the world's finer automobiles, I think that's a Gremlin and an Opel Cadet. Another couple of the world's finer automobiles. Here are what some of these things look like. And, of course, when you get up close, you get that H2S, that rotten egg sulfur smell. In large concentrations, of course, that's a poisonous lethal gas. Here, it just is enough to keep small children away.
Just like going by a paper mill.
Sort of like going by a paper mill. Or an oil production storage tank that has sour crude oil in it. The water levels will go up and down in conjunction with precipitation. And you can see that at a period of low stand, some of the treaties decided to get a little closer and closer. And then water high stand, of course, it's heated from below, comes up, and it's a little hard on the trees there. But this is unquestionably a volcanic hotspot, and need to keep that in mind, that as far as y'all are concerned, it could go. Speaking of volcanics, there are two lava flows that are in this hillside, otherwise made of ash. This makes for somewhat dangerous traffic conditions. Most highway engineers wouldn't accept that as a legitimate layback to a highway. That is pretty much straight up and down, and this stuff is very loose types of material, so you've got to be kind of careful as you go across there.
Where is that?
This is actually on your way out the north side, up into on the Montana side.
And you're heading near Mammoth Hot Springs?
Reasonably close.
I mean, north of there, or?
No, it's north.
East of there?
No, it's north. There's the Montana side. And, there's some things here that look kind of like the countryside right around here, right? You've got this big U-shaped valley in here, which is where the glacier was. You cut this down through. It's very distinctive, that U-shaped valley, the flattened valley. the steep, sharp ridges above it, that's signs of a glacier at work. We'll go to the southwest and we'll see the exact opposite of that. We'll see what running water does with the flat top topography in the deep valley. I've never been to this lake before, but I'd like to go. Mm-hmm. That's Pilot Peak, Cook City Red Lodge area. Pilot Peak. This is a very interesting shot geologically because this light-colored rock here, you see that line, is actually the base of a rather large fault. And the geologists are fascinated by that. But that's a landmark on the trail up through that part of the world, and they call it Pilot Peak. A little farther south, that's Long's Peak. You're coming up out of Estes Park on your way up into Rocky Mountain National Park. So you're looking at Long's Peak, and you see the bowl up there. This has kind of a glaciated appearance to it as well. The M here is for moraine, and moraine, those of you that were talking to last week, is that pile of dirt that gets pushed along the front of a big glacier or gets drug along the side in between where a couple of glaciers coalesce. The thing I want to impress upon you is that this small hill here in the middle distance and this large hill back here behind, those are both moraines. That's just the dirt that the glacier was pushing around. This one back here is on the order of 500 or 600 feet high. The park range with the mummy range in front of it, and of course the explanation for this is that the park range picked off all the moisture, the glaciers formed up there, and you're in an immediate rain shadow effect here. So these mountains, and this is how you go as you go out of Estes Park, you're driving up through here, and you get into these round top mountains down here on the rain shadow side, and then those nicely sculpted, glacially sculpted peaks up above. Complete contrast in the form of the mountains, right? I mean, that's just a huge difference in their appearance. The sharp knife edges, the big bowls, dead giveaway that you're in a glaciated terrain. This does not look substantially different, really, than where we are here. This is top of Trail Ridge Road. Who's taking their trailer over it? Well, that's good. I'd hate to think about taking the trailer. But the top of Trail Ridge is over 12,000.
Yeah, we drove it 3 years ago.
Yeah. It's a piece of work to get over the top of Trail Ridge. You're well above tree line, and here are these little mosses and sedges that are growing down very close to the rock to get out of the wind. It's kind of interesting. Their adaptation is to get low and out of the wind to sort of preserve moisture. They're not that much different in that respect than desert plants trying to do the same thing. Very distinctive topography. A very distinctive topography when you get up into glaciated mountains. It's just impossible to mistake for anything else. The bowls are the cirques, the reeds, the valley here, the valley off over here. This is the heart of the park range. Has its share of nice lakes. This is coming down on the west side. This is Granby or Grand Lake. I'm trying to remember. But it's just like the lakes in this part of the world. Good, 20, 30 seconds swim and you feel refreshed? All right, now let's head slightly different part of the world. This was taken at sunrise, or fairly close to it, in Arches National Park. So we're now in southeastern Utah. These are the LaSalle Mountains off south of Moab, so named because the early Spanish explorers heading for these mountains, trying to get out of the desert and find some cool refreshment, got to the springs and found them all salty, hence the LaSalle Mountains. The sedimentary rocks underneath here through which these mountains had come, full of salt, and it had tainted the rocks, and the rocks had tainted the water. Just outside of Moab, quite a number of spots here. The campground way back in case you've never been. You got to drive forever once you get to the park entrance. But you're rewarded with some interesting stuff. All of these little spires and balanced rocks, and of course all of the arches. And one off over there and another there with the little sows and the backdrop. The big mesas, This is actually called, if I remember correctly, I think this is called something like Park Avenue or Fifth Avenue, with respect to the sensation you have walking down those streets in New York with tall skyscrapers on either side. Some fair size to some of these things. This fellow is only about 5'6", 5'7". He's not doing this a lot of justice. This guy, I wished I'd have had them trade places for this, because this guy is 6'10 and a half, and pretty much swallowed up by that arch. Numerous of them in the park. Here's one of the more famous. Here's watching the last of the Harrison Ford Indiana Jones stuff, right? This is, what was the last? Oh, The Last Crusade. This is Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade. There is no cross of Coronado or Cave around there. That was strictly Hollywood. But that's double arch. That's delicate arch, which stands out there all by itself with about a mile and a half walk. A 6 foot tall person would be about yay on this. Beautiful little arch just out there on the flank of the Slick Rock Country. Across the road is the Canyonlands. That promontory is known as Dead Horse Point, a story that the old cowboys out here would herd the wild ponies out to the end. There was a little place back here where they could put a makeshift gate across, or a little fence across, pull out the ponies they wanted, and then normally turn the rest loose. The story is they forgot to open up their fence one time, left a number of the horses out on the end of the point without any food or water. And the horses had this for their view. That last photograph was taken from down this road. But there's the view of the river, and the horses jumped, driven by thirst, hence Dead Horse Point. That must be a group of geologists, pretty scruffy looking individuals. Hats, sunglasses, kind of a lean, lanky look, walking all the time. They're standing on top of the White Rim down in the Canyonlands. This is one of the most difficult places to get around, probably anywhere within the contiguous 48 states. There's a real dearth of roads in here. There are hundreds of square miles that are not accessible by any road of any kind for any kind of vehicle. It can only be accessed by foot. There's why they call it the White Rim. And that's what south central Utah looks like off in the distance there. Let me come back there. But you notice the thing that the topography is flat top. We have running water at work here, and we have a completely different kind of an appearance down here in southeastern Utah. Southwestern Utah, that interestingly enough, is known as Checkerboard Mesa. It's a fossilized sand dune, which has the lines going this way, and then the water that falls on top runs down these rills, these little troughs here, and that makes the checkerboard. So this stands at the east entrance to Zion, fairly close to Carmel Junction, and this is the first thing you see as you come in from the east side. The west wall of Zion is about 2,000 feet high, most of it straight up, and you have the Virgin River and its tributaries at work here. Notice the difference. They've got this deep V-shaped canyon. It gets better at what's known as the Narrows. Gee, I can't imagine. But from where that person is to the top is 2,000 feet, and it doesn't get much wider than that all the way up. You want to check with the ranger before you go hiking in here, right? Something about flash floods, being able to get away from them. That's the view from the top, which is not bad itself. You hear about the Virgin River, and you think of the early Mormon exodus into Utah and the settlement of it, and you think, okay, they call it the Virgin River because it's virgin country out there. Not so. It was a poor, unfortunate army lieutenant named Thomas Virgin who got murdered by Indians out here, and hence the name. but the Virgin River winds away down to the south to ultimately join up with the Colorado as it gets into the Lake Mead area. And how might you get up for this view?
Is that a walking trail?
That's a walking trail. That's a walking trail. And it's kind of warm in this part of Utah as well. Don't hesitate to take a lot of water with you if you're going to do that.
Yeah. Almost looks like Smith Rock.
It's a
trail.
It's a fair piece of work. That's the West Wall. The West Wall of Zion. And basically a big fossilized sand dune complex, a couple thousand feet high. Absolutely amazing. Oh, a little jump. Is that recognizable to anyone? Want to hazard a guess where this is? Right up here behind is as high as one can legally get in the state of Texas.
Is that Guadalupe Mountain?
This is Guadalupe Mountain. Yeah. Big Bend is, well, actually there are actually two national parks in Texas. One is Big Bend, down in the Big Bend on the Rio Grande, which, believe it or not, is about 400 or 500 miles from here. Mm-hmm. Even though they're both way out there in far west Texas. This Guadalupe Mountains National Park, the Texas-New Mexico border is running like this just a few miles.
It's not far from Carlsbad Caverns.
Carlsbad Caverns is only about another 40, 50 miles back over this way. It's not far from Carlsbad Caverns. There is one highway that goes by here, but you know, you got to get off the interstate at El Paso, or you've got to get off the interstate in some of those far west Texas towns, Van Horn or Pecos or Monahans, and make quite a drive to get here. It's hard to get here without wanting to go here. This is the Texas version of Capitan, not to be confused with the California version that you find in Yosemite Valley. The interesting thing geologically about this is if you walk up here and look at this from top to bottom and take a close look, it's the fossilized remains of algae. Same kind of algae that live in the ocean. And here it is making a peak in far west dry Texas, about almost 9,000 feet above sea level. Capitan looks pretty impressive from down the road. That last shot was from off down here. Capitan is not the highest, but that's what West Texas looks like, by the way. Pretty exciting out there. But this is the foot trail to the top of Guadalupe Peak, and of course you've seen pictures of people standing on top of Rainier and all this sort of stuff. There's the top of Texas. Just like that. That's as high as you can get, about 8,800 feet. And the good people at American Airlines, who are based out of Dallas, donated the thing. They're complete with a little commercial advertising for American Airlines. But if you want to get up there, well, that's what it looks like. Continuing across the southwest, we'll say so long to Guadalupe National Park, Guadalupe Mountains National Park. And another sunrise, somewhat farther to the west. In fact, this was Easter sunrise on the south rim of the Grand Canyon. So we've jumped across to Arizona. And Easter sunrise of the Grand Canyon. Easter sunrise of the Grand Canyon is something you should try to experience once in your life. Teddy Roosevelt said that getting to the Grand Canyon and having a look was something that every American should experience once in their life. But this is something you should experience as well. What the Park Service does, and does very nicely, is that they will invite in a pastor from a church of some kind. They rotate them around every year to come in on Easter morning, and they'll get an electronic organ out and run the power out to them, put it on the end of Mather Point. And one time we were there, they actually had a trumpet trio, and we did Jesus Christ is Risen Today, and the trumpets were going, and they were bouncing off all the walls. It really was an impressive sunrise service. It was kind of hard to beat. But you're standing on the edge of the big ditch, and here are some people out here standing at another point. This whitish layer of rock you see here is about 300 feet thick. And if you were to look at it on the other side, it's about the width of my finger on top of the other side. The scale is so deceptive when you're looking at something like that. There's not any good yardstick to measure it by, but you're looking at this giant chasm in the earth that's from here to there. A short throw is going to be 8 or 10 miles across and towards a mile deep, as a matter of fact. And down at the bottom of it, doesn't look like much from here, there's the Colorado. And the reason it doesn't look like much is because it has so much dirt in it. It's carrying so much sediment that it's always has that kind of dirty brown color. And it seems to me like one of the numbers I've heard thrown about is something like 500 tons of sediment past any given point in a day's time. Something like that, which speaks to the longevity of Lake Mead ultimately, because it's going to have a real impact over time with Lake Mead. Down at the very bottom, actually not at the very bottom, partway up the trail that goes up to the north side, there is a little oasis. And as far as I know, Girardia hasn't been a problem here yet. But there's a little oasis in here where you can go in and fill up your canteen. And it's in this little side canyon and kind of out of the sun. You can take a break. But this rock right here is kind of interesting. It's virtually pure calcium carbonate. And those of you who have in your lives fought the problems of hard water, and have fought the problems of that little yellowish-brown stain around the bottom of the sink that you've always tried to scrub out, your little sink ring, that's a sink ring. About 20 feet high. But it is a wonderful place to stop and to kind of take a break from the rigors of the day. Not doing too much close to home because we can go outside and see it, but that's Mount Rainier from the vicinity of Packwood. And largest of the Cascade volcanoes, about 14,411 feet. Makes it pretty large by anybody's scale. Whitney is the tallest in the contiguous 48 states in California at about 14,495, something like that. But that is an exceptionally large mountain, active volcano, as far as the U.S. Geological Survey is concerned, and the researchers at the University of Washington, it's a candidate to go at any time. Anybody from Tacoma here? Oh, well, don't buy property. No, that's not true either. But it's not far from Tacoma. And the thing about Rainier is that it has the largest set of glaciers, the largest ice field of any mountain in the contiguous 48 states. And the USGS and the University of Washington are not as concerned about death and destruction from the volcano blowing up per se as they are about the mud flows and debris flows that are going to result from major eruption with respect to melting of the glaciers. There are lots of deep cut valleys on the flanks of Rainier, some of them that lead straight down toward the Tacoma area. And those of you who remember the damage to the Tula River from St. Helens, it's not difficult for a professional geologist to envision that kind of thing as well. Speaking of St. Helens, that's not it, but we're there, right? You see all the logs knocked down on the sides of the hills? This is the devastation zone. This is part of the blast zone from St. Helens. This is the oblique portion. portion of it was going this way. This is kind of off to the east. That's Mount Adams off in the distance, which is the second highest of the volcanic peaks in Washington State and about the third highest in the entire Cascades. Only Rainier and Shasta are taller. This thing's almost 12,300. If you were forced to build a home on top of an active volcano, I mean, you got big trouble with the government of some country, and they said, you got to live on top of an active volcano. This would be the volcano you would choose in the Cascades. You notice how sort of asymmetrically rounded off it is. It doesn't come up like Hood does or some of the others to quite the point. This thing has a tendency more toward gentle lava flows rather than violent eruptions with all the steam and gas, this sort of thing. And that has been its history, even its recent, most recent history as far as we can tell. And so it'd be a little bit more like living in Hawaii, where you can kind of watch the lava flow come down towards your house as you're leaving. Okay. Not much to say there, in that this is the remains of Mount Mazama, Crater Lake, Wizard Island, that 6,000-year-old cinder cone that's out in the middle of the lake. The thing, well, I mean, who's not been to Crater Lake? Well, there have been a number of them not been. This is another one of these places that if you ever get the opportunity, you should definitely go. The water is so extraordinarily blue. It's just one of the most wonderful photo stops that you can possibly make.
Unless it's foggy.
Right. Unless it's foggy. There's something about Floridians showing up the 1st of May in their Winnebagoes and wearing shorts that they didn't have a good time. Something about 10 or 15 feet of snow on the ground, and they weren't expecting that. But yes, if you can get a clear day, why, this is one of the spectacular national parks as well. This mile, this lake is about 6 miles across, no matter which way you want to slice it. And there's a rim road that goes all the way around this thing, various places that one can stop. One of my favorite photographs, Ghost Rock? The Ghost? Is this Ghost Rock? What's the name? Phantom Rock? Phantom Ship?
Phantom Ship.
Phantom Ship. Yeah. Knew we'd get there sooner. The Phantom Ship, this little igneous intrusion has come up in a tabular form out here. What I liked about it was that you got the reflection of that, but you also got the reflection of the clouds on the surface of the water.
10, 12 years ago, we drove up there on the 4th of July with her sister from Wisconsin. And alongside the road, there was 12 to 15 foot drifts of snow.
when we were up 2 years ago, and that's when I got these pictures, but we did ask them how the spring had been, and as early May, while they still had a lot of snow, 10, 12, 15 feet.
They had 50 feet last winter.
Yeah, well, the ranger manning the gate was laughing about the fact is there was a whole convoy of Floridians in their Winnebagoes. And they got out, of course, you know, the shorts, the flowered floral print shirt, all that stuff, in the middle of 15 feet of snow. And they decided they didn't want to stay, but they weren't really dressed for it. Okay. Part of the Sierra, the Yosemite Valley. All this water that you see in this part of the world, you know, if you head up toward the Copper Basin, you can see it. There's the Crown Point Falls up here at the head of the Railroad Valley. All the world's great waterfalls, or in terms of the distance that they drop, the big drop, really all the world's great waterfalls you can thank glaciation for. They produce those hanging valleys, those little side glaciers, the tributary glaciers were, and those hanging valleys are left just that, left hanging, and the water courses that are now established in them come to the edge and fall over. And so you get upper and lower Yosemite Falls with a combined drop of some 1,600 feet. You can thank glaciated terrains for that. This is Vernal Falls, and I'm on the Mist Trail. I bet you can't figure out why that's what it is. But this is the mighty Merced River coming out of Yosemite with a good snowmelt behind it. And Yosemite, when there is a good snow year, is just a wonderful place to come and see the water. There it is from a little farther off. Sort of reminds you of this part though, right? You see all this vegetation in here? The west flank of the Sierra is quite thick with vegetation. The east flank at the same elevation is literally a desert. There's nothing out there but scruffy cactus. And it has to do with the fact that the west side of the Sierra has picked off all the moisture. This is everybody's normal first look at Yosemite. This is coming in the main entrance from the west. Off in the distance is Half Dome. Right here is the California version of Capitan. Okay, so that's the Capitan face. Granitic rock, the Chief Tenaya Glacier has cut through this and given you all these great landforms in the Yosemite Valley. This is what it looks like from on top, looking back down into the heart of the Yosemite Valley. This is the telephoto lens and some of the camping areas. Well, they're actually off back down the trees this way a little bit. But from a couple 3,000 feet on up and looking back down into the heart of the valley. This is because we're on our way to Half Dome. And granitic domes are not unusual. I've got a picture of another one here in a moment. Half Dome, as in the other half here, the question, where's the other half of the dome? And the answer is that it's not there anymore. The Chief Tenaya Glacier came down this canyon and then kind of made a bend around here. This, unfortunately, was on the outside of the curve where it was catching a lot of the force of the glaciers that came around the curve. And rock is an interesting substance in that this rock has a great compressive strength. In other words, if you want to try and put it in a vise and squeeze it, good luck. You know, it's hard to break rock by doing that. But even granite has by comparison, a fairly low tensile strength. In other words, it's much less resistant to being pulled apart. And even the rock climbers who climb on this will tell you that they want to be careful because of the discontinuities in the rock, that they can actually pull some of this stuff apart. So the glacier kind of sliced this thing. It didn't take it head on. It kind of sliced this thing, and you're left with Half a Dome. We're going to wander our way over here, up this shoulder, and right there where you see that white streak is where the little hand trail goes, those little handrails there. They'll actually take you up on top. That's it there. Rock changes character as you get a little closer to it. Notice it's got much more of this onion skin kind of an appearance here. The geologists have a name for that. They call it exfoliation, but it's a sheeting off. And it's because this granite really isn't where it's supposed to be. Granites tend to be in place underground. If a magma gets all the way to the surface of the earth, we call it a lava, and you have a volcanic rock, volcanoes, this sort of stuff. But if that magma gets trapped underground, then it's an intrusive. It's intruded into the country rock, never comes to the surface. It's an intrusive igneous rock, and it just cools and hardens there. And that's what granites are. Granites are cooled below the surface, now exposed by erosion. But the problem is that the granite formed under pressure. It formed under pressure. It had a weight of sediment above it. And now there's no way to sediment above it, and it's kind of coming apart at the seams. So it looks like solid rock, but you get a little closer and you see some things here that give you pause to wonder a little bit. Now, we're going to head up it. Actually, I did head up it. Okay, this is... how old was I when I did this one there?
Yeah, still pretty stupid.
Yeah, It wasn't 1819 anymore. It was a little older than that. But this is what's referred to as the diving board on Half Dome. And of course, you see that it falls away back underneath there. And this is kind of standing out there waiting to take a plunge. And I got a big kick out of this because most people were taking photographs like this with a little help from their friends. I couldn't get my friend, it was not my wife, she had better sense than to come up here. But I did get a friend to come up with me, but for some reason he was scared of heights. And he'd never get very close to the edge, so I couldn't get him to even do that with me. So I went out and sat on this little finger that was sticking out. Oh, that's 3,000 or so feet straight down. But it was a great photograph. Too bad it didn't turn out. It was a stronger roll. So I got that back, and there's all this red smear across it. And anyway, but yeah, that's a little 3 or 4 foot finger. You say, there's the bottom of it right there. It was just sticking out of the edge there. But made for a great photo shot. And this is a photograph that was taken by my friend the chicken, or the smart one, depending on how you want to think about it. But this is right at the edge of the diving board, and I was trying to get in close enough to get documentary proof that I was actually hanging 10 off the Half Dome, which I was, but you can only see that I was hanging 5, that other foot.
That's actually a mural you were standing in
front of. That's right. This was done in Kmart. And it just looks that way.
Right.
Just looks that way. But you see some similarities. Of course, you can see the shots of the water through there. But the High Sierra, a glaciated country, much like the Cascades. There's a whole dome, as opposed to half of the one. And the Merced in the high country, where it's a little gentler. The Mist Trail. Surprise, surprise. When you hike up to the high country, one of the things you do is make sure you have your poncho, and you put on tennis shoes for this stretch of the trail because they're going to get wet, and pack your boots away. And then after you get up through this section, while you go on up. Symbol of California, taken with a telephoto lens. Okay. One can even run into a national park off the California coast in the form of the Channel Islands National Park. And this may be new to some of you, but here's the greater Los Angeles area and these North Channel Islands stretching all the way from Anacapa, which is the Indian word for mirage, out to San Miguel, constitute the Northern Channel Islands. That's East Anacapa. The distance across the Santa Barbara Channel here from the city of Ventura is about 15, 16 miles. There's not a major lighthouse on top, and that obviously is Arch Rock off the end there. And this is early morning out in the Santa Barbara Channel, which is known for some fairly rough weather. I've heard people compare it with the straits going out to San Juan's as you come out of Puget, as a matter of fact. And as a matter of fact, one of the trips we took out, they called the house after I left, right? The Park Service called the house after I left, telling me not to bring the students because they had a boat try to go out and it got capsized right at the breakwater and the captain had been drowned. Of their charter boat company. We didn't get the phone call. We went down, and by that time it calmed down enough they could take us out. They didn't tell us that had happened until after we came back. But on our way out to Anacapa, and of course this is whale watching country for the Californians, and those are the Santa Monica and Topatopas and Ventura back there in the background, and other little friends that come by to play. But on our way to the Anacapas, this photograph was actually taken coming back in one day. This is the Santa Barbara Channel, as calm as I have ever seen it. Santa Cruz Island, where the Mexican government used to send some of their prison population. There's a thing around on this side called Prisoner Harbor. Of course, that stopped in the 1840s with California becoming part of the United States. But there is West Anacapa, Middle Anacapa. We'll go back over to East Anacapa in the middle.
in a minute. I don't know if any of you are sailors, but for the Santa Barbara Channel to be that calm is really an extraordinary event, almost glass-like there. Once on the islands, with all these trails around, the Chumash Indians used to sail out here, and there are a number of Indian middens on top of the island that one can go visit. There's the low water, low tide level between east and the middle and the west Anacap over there. Very rugged volcanic rock, basaltic rock. When we get over to the other end, you'll see arch rock. This is fallen in historical time. You need to put this in this context. This rock right here is out of the plane towards us a little bit. In other words, this rock is closer than this or this. And you can develop a sense that this thing could do this and just go all the way up. And that, in fact, was the case. The Chumash oral tradition has it that they used to basically tie up their canoes out here and would walk to the top of Anacapa along this. When it falls through completely, you're left with a sea stack. This is a sea arch. When that falls through, then you'll have another set of sea stacks to go with this one and the big one. It was entirely fortuitous that I caught that tanker right there in the middle. I didn't realize that until after I had the picture developed. And here's another tanker. They're all heading for the port of Los Angeles. The rock is home to a number of birds. I think you can even recognize that one as a pelican, a California brown pelican. There's actually pelicans and gulls all over the rock. And of course, that carries with it its own particular odor. And in fact, you can even get a feel of that kind of whitish outline for all the bird droppings on the side of the rock. And there is the promised sunset picture. This is taken from yet another mountain range on the California-Nevada line. I'm spending the night out here in the White Inyo Mountains of far eastern California. There's the High Sierra, and notice the sharp ridge, tooth-like appearance to this, the glaciated High Sierra. The sun is shining down into the Owens Valley. If you have never been in the Owens Valley, if you've been there, you'll know there are towns in there named Bishop, Independence, Lone Pine, those things. An interesting history of the Owens Valley, Mulholland, from which the famous drive in Los Angeles is named, was a water engineer for the city of Los Angeles. And basically, the whole Owens Valley belongs to the city of Los Angeles now. They have taken basically all of the water out of it. And that, a number of years ago, inspired kind of a sagebrush rebellion by farmers out in this part of the world. Very interesting story of the Owens Valley. But one of the things about the Owens Valley is that it's only about 4,000 feet in elevation. And a little bit farther north this way, up toward Bishop, White Peak is on top of the White Inyos, and the Sierra on the other side. And you have some 14,000-foot peaks on either side of you, and you're in a 4,000-foot high valley. It's really one of the impressive sights in North America, because you're in the bottom of the valley and you've got these 14,000 peaks on either side of you. And it's not something that everybody knows about, but if you ever do get the opportunity to take a drive through eastern California, this would be well worth your while. And I think that's the tour of America, and actually we did it in less than an hour. How about that?